Welcome to the Donna Sebo Show. Donna is an international mental practitioner, award-winning author, counselor, speaker, teacher, and radio TV personality. Dedicated to empowering others through her mental skills, she also features authors and experts from all over the world to share their knowledge and experience with you, the listening audience. Now, let's join Donna and her guests. Here's Donna.
An hour of mind power. Well, as I've been telling you all week, today we are going to have lots of information about good food because my guest, Ruth Milstein, is an author who has put together a fabulous book of recipes from another part of the world, but that we can implement in our world, and it is just wonderful. Some of the stuff that we're going to be sharing. It's holiday season. This is a time where you're going to be fixing, I know, some of your seasonal favorites, but why not give thought to cooking with love? And of course, you can do that with anything that you prepare. But this recipe book also gives us a different perspective on food because we are going to be exploring a little bit about Israeli Mediterranean type of cuisine. I want to welcome to the airwaves Ruth Milstein. Thank you for joining me today, Ruth.
Thank you, Donna. Delighted.
It is just a joy to have you on the air. Now, you are finishing up the Hanukkah season. You were talking to me before we went on air saying that the last day of Hanukkah is going to be tomorrow. And I know Hanukkah started on the 12th, and there are so many fascinating traditions and different ways of dealing with food during this season. Tell us what, you were talking about potato pancakes, which I know are really very big, and there's all kinds of different foods, but what is it especially that is very different about the Hanukkah season when you're fixing food?
It's, again, every day eat potato pancakes, and for dessert is the same sweet, which is donuts, jelly donuts, which everybody like it. Both of them, it's deep fried. I improvise the potato latkes and I bake it. So I'm cutting there on fat, and that it tastes the same.
Now, you were born in Israel, and you graduated from Tel Aviv University. You've got a master's degree in art and journalism. You did study for jewelry design as in Israel as well as here in the United States.
Yeah.
You came to New York in 1985, so you made a career out of designing jewelry, but you really have a love for food.
Yes.
I was going to say, designing jewelry, you know, working with food is an art form as far as I'm concerned.
Yes.
And even when you're scrambling eggs, it can either be a disaster or it can be something beautiful on a plate.
But the creativity.
Yes, it's a wonderful activity. And here you decided to do this cookbook. How did you get from designing jewelry to doing a cookbook?
Because I love to cook and use the creativity of mixing unusual combination of ingredients. And I love to experiment with food ingredients in developing new recipes. I like to mix chicken and fruit and nuts. And I use a lot of spices and herbs, and I experiment and I improvise. I add and I deduct some herbs or spice if I'm not happy with the result. And the spices and herbs, which are always on hand in my kitchen and available all around in every market in the United States.
Mm-hmm.
And this helps to give outstanding flavor. And while cutting down on fat, even when I want to fry something in a fry pan, I use cooking spray instead of oil, and it tastes the same.
Mm-hmm.
I use a lot of ginger, garlic, cinnamon, olive, wine, and the alcohol in wine. Usually we use wine to cook for stew or pot roast. It's like for 2 hours of cooking, the alcohol evaporates, so children can eat it too.
Mm-hmm. And the flavor is there.
The flavor is
there. Yeah, and there's a real knack with using wines. You don't want to use a wine that you don't like the taste of with anything
that
you're cooking.
No, I use good wine, or you can use leftover wine. Mm-hmm. If you had dinner and you have a leftover half bottle, you can use it another week or two. After a week or two, it's okay.
I have in front of me mm-hmm. some information that you had been nominated for the Gourmand World Cookbook Awards, and it was, this is just absolutely amazing because you were representing, I believe, the United States in competition for the best in the world with results. And
for the world, I already my cookbook, Cooking with Love, is the winner in Israel.
In Israel. Okay.
It
I was
the
wrong.
Winner.
That was my error. It was in Israel that it won.
In Israel. Even the cookbook is published in the United States.
Okay. That I got twisted around.
Yeah.
Well, this is marvelous. And you were also invited to go to a Paris cookbook fair.
Yes.
In February.
The cookbook is qualified for the next step, which is a gourmand best in the world competition, which is going to take place in Paris in February.
Wow. Who would have ever dreamed that this is something that would end up taking you to Paris? And my goodness, it opens up a whole new world for you.
Well, yes, I'm excited.
Oh, you should be. I think that's absolutely marvelous. Now, what I wanted to do was share with my audience that with the foods in Israel, there have been so many different cultural components that have added to the cuisine of Israel, not unlike the United States. I mean, my goodness, we have cuisine represented from all over the world. But tell us how different things came about in Israel with the cooking, because you bring up, that Eastern European Jewish people have brought things in, people from the Arab countries. So tell us a little bit about the mixture.
People emigrate to Israel when they create Israel in 48 from over 100 countries all around the world. So each one of them brought his own food. So the Israeli that was born in Israel, he had to try to improvise and to mix. To mix the food. Basically, the Israeli food is fresh fruit. It's fresh food, fresh fruit, fresh vegetable, chicken, a lot of fish. But still, all the food from the other generation, the previous generation, still we cook it in Israel. And let's say from East Europe, people from East Europe, they cook now food from North Africa, like Moroccan food.
Mm-hmm.
Because people start get married, they start the same household. There is like east and west, and they improvise it. If they didn't like too much oil, if they didn't like some herb, they improvise it and they change it and mix it. So in Israel, you have like all the kind of food, but the basic there, the food is fresh. It's fresh and no chemical. When I eat in Israel, I eat like twice than I eat here. I never gain weight. It's fresh and no chemical.
Mm-hmm.
No chemical. And they use a lot of olive oil.
Yes, and the Mediterranean influence, as you mentioned in your book, is quite strong.
Healthy.
Now, I mentioned to you before I went on air that there was a friend of ours who has a member in their family that is very strict with their eating habits. They're very kosher. There's other members that are not in the family, so they had to set up a portion in the kitchen so that these people could do exactly what they needed to do.
And
I thought it was interesting about some of the details that you brought out about kosher food, and I knew someone that worked with a family, was a cook and a housekeeper for them, and they were very strict in what they could do. But I thought some of my listeners might find it interesting. I think it's always fascinating to deal with different cultures. Milk and meat or meat products cannot be cooked.
They
can
be cooked together.
They cannot be, right.
Cooked together. This law, it came from 4,000 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
Because that time they didn't have a freezer, they didn't have fridge. The two reasons, basic. If you eat meat, it digests very slow. The milk product, it digests very fast, faster.
Mm-hmm.
So if you eat the milk product after the meat, something is not right in your stomach. Like it's, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
It's going, like the milk product going through the meat. But the basic reason is that time, again, they didn't have fridge, they didn't have freezer. The people weren't allowed to drink the milk and eat the meat off, like from like mother and son. You know what I mean? The animal?
Mm-hmm. Yes. So and it, again, you bring out a very good point, because this was something that 4,000 years ago, and that's what we have to keep in mind, there
yes.
wasn't the sanitation.
Yes.
The lifestyle was very different. The environment was very different. And so these people learned these ways of being able to handle infection, disease, parasites, things like this.
Mm-hmm.
And when you look at Chinese history, the Chinese history, digressing for just a moment, there was a general in an army that figured out that if you boiled water, their water had been contaminated for a long, long time, and this is, you know, a few thousand years
mm-hmm.
ago,
yes.
that people, their military stayed healthy. So the order went out, have to boil your water. You don't drink any water unless you boil it. Well, again, it was because there was poor sanitation and all these variables. But regardless, even... Yeah, long centuries ago. So just like you said, 4,000 years ago, these were things that were established, and some people have chosen to bring them forward. In today's world, we, in many areas of nutrition, they are finding that there is that digestive component. So it's amazing how different things have evolved because of environments and how people have carried forth the traditions. It's really fascinating to find out about this. Now, one of many things, you have got so much good information in your book.
Donna, if you mention kosher, the book, for people who keep kosher, the book is kosher.
Yes.
Strictly kosher, for people that keep kosher.
Mm-hmm. I think
that all the recipe is kosher.
Yes. But what's so good about it is that it is involving fresh ingredients, and you have some wonderful suggestions, like adding poppy seeds to green salads. And I use poppy seeds in cabbage salads. I mean, it's always been a wonderful thing to have.
Yeah,
that
cabbage and poppy
seeds. Oh,
yeah.
It's wonderful.
Wonderful.
And
yeah.
You've got some good substitutes in here for
mm-hmm.
mayonnaise and to add flavors. So we're going to be sharing some of that, and then adding a little bit of lemon juice to certain kinds of foods. It
yes.
makes flavor. I just had lunch with a friend yesterday, and she was telling me, you know, because I always like lemon with my tea when I order it, and I had not consumed or utilized one of the pieces of lemon. She said, do you mind if I have it? And she chose to eat the lemon itself, which, of course, we know is going to be extremely tart. And she said she learned a long time ago that it was very good to have a little bit of lemon after her meal because it helped digestion. A little slice of lemon, eating the lemon fruit. So you go into a number of various things here as to handling of food, et cetera, but I would love to get into some of your recipes. Now, one of the tips that you give, which I would like for you to explain, is how to buy tofu. We have many of our listeners who are vegetarians, people that really are into tofu. What is the form you should buy tofu in at the grocery store, and why?
First of all, buy it from a store that you trust, that store that is established for a long, long time by you, and it's that. You can get tofu now in every supermarket, in every mini market. I never buy tofu that is not packed, because there is tofu that it sell in like bucket of water.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and it's cheaper. I never buy it. And always I buy the firm or extra firm.
All right. Why don't you recommend the tofu that's in the water?
In the water because the hygiene. I don't trust the hygiene. The packed, I know it's packed and it's clean and it's in the fridge all the time. And the one in the water, it's always outside or it's open. Not for those days.
Let's talk about some of your recipes. So for those of you listening, there are some really, really good recipes in here. And what I wanted to do was share one of my favorites, and it's a creamed mushroom soup. Now, we're in winter months, and I know winter hasn't officially arrived according to the calendar, but there's nothing like a good soup. And if you are having company and you wanted to have something that is really flavorful yet light, I think your cream of mushroom soup is just marvelous. So I wanted to share it with my listeners. This makes 4 servings. You need 1/4 cup of butter. And then you're going to need 1 pound of mushrooms, and you want to make sure they're thinly sliced. And they should be fresh mushrooms. I think if you were in a pinch,
then
you could use...
It's available now with every market.
Oh, yes, absolutely. Mm-hmm. And then you had 2 shallots finely chopped. And, of course, if you didn't have shallots, you could use regular onion. Just make sure it's very, very finely chopped. A tablespoon of flour, 1/2 teaspoon of salt, 1/4 teaspoon of white pepper, 2 teaspoons of tomato paste, 2 cups of water, 1 tablespoon of fresh lemon juice, 1 cup of 1/2 and 1/2 or light cream, and you want 1 cup of milk that's 1% fat, and you recommend 2 tablespoons of dry vermouth, and it gives it such a wonderful, wonderful flavor. And what you do, it's so simple. This isn't rocket science. It's really good. You just melt your butter in a medium saucepan over medium heat. You put in your mushrooms and your shallots, and you just cook and stir it until the mushrooms are browned lightly and most of the liquid is gone. And mushrooms have a lot of water, so you have to understand you're going to have a lot of moisture in the bottom of your pan, but that's going to evaporate out. Then you sprinkle it with your flour, your salt, and your pepper. You add the tomato paste to the mushrooms, and you stir it gently, reduce the heat to low, and gradually blend in your water. Bring it to a boil, cover, and reduce your heat. Simmer it for about 20 minutes, and then you puree it in your Cuisinart or your blender until smooth, and then you mix your lemon juice in at the end. You put it back in your saucepan. You blend in your 1/2 and 1/2 in milk. Stir it over medium heat until it's very hot. Don't boil it, though. And then, just before you serve it, you blend in your vermouth, and you serve it right then and there. It is so good, and with some fresh bread and a salad, what a meal!
And you can prepare it ahead. You can prepare it night before, day before.
Oh, my, and the flavors would get so much more mellow.
And you can add the vermouth only when you warm it up.
When you warm it up, so you don't put the vermouth in until you're ready to serve it. And if you don't want the vermouth, you don't have to have it. But the vermouth is going to give that a very, very unique flavor. It has a little bit of sweetness to it, but not very much.
Mm-hmm.
It's very, very good.
And most of the alcohol going to evaporate.
Oh, yes. The alcohol will evaporate away. And then let's go into one of your meat recipes. You have this recipe for chicken with wine and balsamic vinegar. Now, that's one of my favorite vinegars, balsamic vinegar.
You know, this recipe,
awesome.
Always I double the recipe and I freeze half of it. It's so good. It's so good. Also, I prepare it even 2 days ahead. And always I double it.
Wow.
It's so tasty. This recipe is really unique and tasty.
The thing about this, if you can freeze it, hey, for those of you that are getting ready for the holidays and you wanted to have something, if you're like me playing hostess and you want to have something prepared, you could prepare this in advance, have it in the freezer the day before, let it thaw in the refrigerator, and then just warm it up, and it can be part of your buffet or whatever you're serving, and it is just going to be marvelous. Let's give out this recipe because I just think it's marvelous here. You've got 1/3 cup of olive oil, 1 large onion sliced, 2 garlic cloves peeled and sliced. You need 1 carrot. You want to slice that. 2 celery stems. You want to slice them up. You need a bay leaf. You want 4 chicken legs with thighs. And, of course, you're going to cut that up a bit. 1/2 teaspoon of salt, 1/4 teaspoon of freshly crushed black pepper, 1 tablespoon of freshly minced tarragon or 1/2 tablespoon of dried tarragon, 2 tablespoons of balsamic vinegar, and a half a cup of your favorite dry white wine. This is how easy this recipe is. And keep in mind, you can fix, like Ruth said, a double batch, freeze part of it, or make it up for company, freeze it so it's ready to go. It's just going to be wonderful. You put your oil in a pot, steam the onion, garlic, carrot, celery, and bay leaf for about 5 minutes until the vegetables begin to turn tender. Then you put the salt and pepper on your chicken while that's going on. Put a little bit of oil in a frying pan and fry the chicken on both sides until it's golden brown. Then you put the chicken in the pot together with the vegetables. Mix them up. Add your tarragon and vinegar. Add a little bit more salt and pepper and cook for 5 minutes. Add your wine. Bring it to a boil and cook in a covered pot on low heat for 45 minutes. And all those flavors are going to just blend beautifully. And then you can serve it with rice, you could serve it with pasta, you know, maybe some spinach, fresh spinach, serve it on fresh spinach leaves. This is a marvelous dish.
It's very tasty, very tasty. I make it a lot. I cook it a lot.
Now, you have a number of chicken recipes in here, all kinds of things, chicken with orange, but you also go into working with beef. And you have something here that I would never have thought of trying, and that's roast beef glazed in orange.
Oh, now, in
a million years, I would never have considered combining roast beef with oranges. I've done a lot of other stuff, but I've never used oranges. How'd you come up with this recipe?
Because Israel, it's the orange country. We have oranges. I was raised in a big house with big backyards, with vegetables and all the trees. And I used to watch my mother, how she cook. And I was very curious what she's doing. All my cooking is it's my mom and curiosity. And she encouraged me. She encouraged me to cook also.
Oh, that's
so
wonderful.
We had a lot of trees of orange, and I saw her cooking with orange. And the orange is the chicken or the meat with the orange. It's the acid. The acid gives, first of all, it soft the chicken or the meat, because orange is acid. And it gives it like unique sweetness also, unique taste and sweetness also.
I like what you said with this recipe. You can make a lot of friends when you serve this dish.
Yes. Oh, yes. Yeah.
Okay.
Oh, yeah.
All right, so let me give out the recipe for this, because for those of you that love to cook, this is roast beef glazed in orange, and this is going to involve a little bit of sugar. You're going to need 3/4 cup of brown sugar, 2 tablespoons of orange juice, 1.5 tablespoons of lemon juice, 5 tablespoons of oil, 1 teaspoon of ginger powder, or 1 tablespoon of fresh ginger, and you need to thinly scrape that. And you know you can do that with a spoon. 1/2 teaspoon of mustard, 1/2 teaspoon of salt, 1/4 teaspoon of black pepper, 2.5 pounds of beef for roasting, and this needs to be one piece of beef, 2.5 pounds. 1 orange sliced but not peeled, and of course this is going to be for a garnish. Now this is what you do. And again, this, your recipes are so simple.
It's simple, yeah.
They're very simple. You preheat your oven to 450 degrees, so you're going to be cooking this at a very high temperature. You mix your sugar, the fruit juices, the oil, the ginger, the mustard, the salt, and the black pepper, and you just whisk that together. That'll take you all of 30 seconds, and then smear it all over the piece of meat. This is just the meat's glaze. You want to lubricate a baking pan with oil and place the piece of beef in it. You put it into the oven and you roast it for 20 minutes. Then, after you roast it at the high temperature for 20 minutes, you're going to lower the temperature of the oven to 250 degrees and continue to roast for another 1.5 hours. So this is a slow roast. And then you want to baste your beef at least 4 times in the sauce that's accumulating in your pan. And when you're ready to serve it, it goes to a serving platter. Don't cut it until after it's set for about 10 minutes. What cut of beef would you recommend for this?
Usually I use a piece of shoulders, which is lone fat, because all the spice and the liquid, it makes it very tasty. I use a lot of shoulders.
a lot of beef shoulder. Okay, well, that is a suggestion, but I'm sure that there are some other pieces of meat that, you could try with. But you're not cooking a huge amount here. It's only about 2.5 pounds.
Yes.
So it really is going to be nice for about 4 people. And this is something that would be delicious for sandwiches if you had leftovers. But
leftover.
But you have in this book, you have veal, you have fish, you have all kinds of wonderful recipes. You also go into desserts and pasta. You have that here as well. You've got cheese bread, which I just think is awesome. I'm a big fan of cheese bread. But your cheese bread, you use goat cheese.
Yes, it's softer, and the aroma, it's the taste, it's unique.
And you said that if you can't find a particular goat cheese, you can substitute feta cheese. But actually, just about any goat cheese is going to work.
Feta cheese is saltier.
Mm-hmm.
So I will soak it with water for 1 hour. Goat cheese. But goat cheese, I see now, you can find it in every market.
That's true. So this is a recipe for a cheese bread that is wonderful, absolutely wonderful. I wouldn't care what your background is. If you're like me and you love cheese and you love bread, the combination is a winning one. You're going to need a 9 1/4 to 2.5 inch round spring form pan for this recipe, which I thought was interesting. You're going to need 8 ounces of butter, 10 ounces of goat cheese, 2.5 cups of flour, 2 teaspoons of baking powder, 2 tablespoons of oil, and 6 ounces of any hard, sharp yellow cheese. And of course, you're going to need to grate that. And that's where one of your, you know, food processors is just fabulous for grating hard cheese like that. And then for baking, once you've got your bread made up, you're going to need 1 egg yolk, and you might want to add some sesame seed or caraway seeds on the top. But what you do, you take all of the ingredients, the butter, the cheese, the flour, the baking powder, the oil, and the yellow cheese, you mix them all together. If you have a mixer, use your bread dough hook, get them all together. And then as soon as it's made into a dough ball, all you do is wrap it up in plastic, chill it in the refrigerator for at least an hour, and then you're going to divide the dough up into 6 balls, put them side by side in your baking pan, greased with oil, and remember that is a 9 1/4 by 2.5 inch round springform pan. And then you want to put your egg yolk and your sesame or caraway seeds on the top. Bake it for a half hour in a 400 degree oven. Don't slice the bread. What you want to do is tear off little pieces of it. It's just amazing. And there's so many other things that she has in this wonderful, wonderful cookbook. What's your favorite recipe, or do you have one?
It's the long recipe for the holiday to make ahead. Like the beef chunk in red wine.
Mm-hmm.
I make it always like 2 days ahead. It's for the holiday with red rice. We have great recipe in the book on the side. Or in this time of the year, I cook a lot with kumquat, which is available in this time of the year.
Mm-hmm.
We have one recipe, it's chicken in orange juice and kumquat. And kumquat, I keep in my freezer for all year round.
Oh, that's interesting.
Oh, yes, all year round. Because the kumquat, it's available only this time of the year, I think in the fall till January.
Mm-hmm.
So I buy a bunch of them, I freeze them, and I have it all year round.
Well,
same with the cranberry. So I have it, I can make cranberry sauce all year round with kumquat.
Oh, that's marvelous. She's got chocolate mousse cookies in here, fudge chocolate layer cake. There's tofu squares in ginger. So if you're a vegetarian, you've got a lot of choices. If you're interested in really paying attention to having less fat in the diet, she has got such wonderfully, deliciously flavored recipes in here that whether it's the holiday period or not, the book would make a great gift. She's got a mayonnaise substitute, a salt substitute.
We have two mayonnaise substitutes, one from yogurt, one made from tofu for people that keep kosher.
Mm-hmm. So there's all of this. Delicious.
And there is vegetarian chicken liver. You know, in chicken liver, there is a lot of cholesterol. I have 3 recipes of vegetarian chicken liver, one made from mushroom, one from eggplant, one from zucchini. And this you can make 2-3 days ahead.
Well, there you go.
You're going to have really a lot of friends here. And it tastes the same. It tastes the same. And for working women, always keep in your freezer frozen vegetable and frozen chopped onion. So when you bring the meat from the butcher, prepare the hamburger already. Prepare meatball or chicken ball or turkey ball. Prepare it and put it in freezer bag and put it in the freezer. In the morning before you go to work, put the freezer bag in the fridge. When you come from work, it's ready to cook. Add frozen vegetable. Cook some carb on the side like brown rice or mashed potato. And you have all the meal. You have the carb, you have the veggie, you have the protein.
It is
easy.
Wonderful.
We have to make our life easy because all of the women are working now.
Oh,
and
yes, they are.
A lot of double recipe, like regular and diet, for potato salad, for blinches, for honey cake, banana bread made from cereal.
Oh, it's wonderful. Ruth, we are out of time. Now, I want my audience to know that you've got a website, ruthmilstein.com. That's ruthmilstein.com. Her book, Cooking with Love, is she's got so much good information about other cultures, but also using things that you probably have in your kitchen, making it easy for you with what she's just said. We are all so busy. And if you wanted to give a gift to someone who just has a passion for cooking, this book, Cooking with Love, is a must-have. That could be for that person that you know that you've wondered, should I get him something like this for the holidays? Why not? It brings a whole new level of working with food and delicious food into the kitchen. Ruth, I want to thank you so much for being my guest today.
Thank you, Lana.
It's been a pleasure having you. This is Donna Sebo. We're taking a break, and we're going to be back in just a moment. Don't forget, Ruth Milstein, MILSTEIN.com. That's her website. We're going to be right back.
Are you concerned about nutrition? Do you work hard to eat right, try to feed yourself and your family nutritious food? Well, you'll want to know about glyconutrients. What are they? These are sugars that are present in nature, however, we're not getting them in our food anymore. Scientific study is proving that these sugars are necessary for all cellular and immune system function. Over 20,000 studies are conducted each year on glycoforms alone. These are the sugar protein structure that line each and every cell of the body. 4 out of the last 8 Nobel Prizes in physiology have been awarded for research in the area of cellular communication and how these sugars work in the body. This is Donna Sebo. Every day I bring to you information that will empower and light up your life. I would like to invite you to visit my website, DelphiInternational.com, and find out more about these glyconutrients. That's DelphiInternational.com. Go to my website, go to the left side of the screen, tap on the button that says glyconutrients. MIT's Technology Review, February 2003, states that glycomics is one of the 10 emerging technologies that will change the world. Education is the key to advancement of understanding and making our lives better. Visit my site, DelphiInternational.com. Go to the left side of the screen and tap on the button that says glyconutrients. I know it'll make a difference for you, as it has for me.
Do you want to lose weight? Do you deal with diabetes, high blood pressure, osteoporosis, or chronic pain? Do you want to know one of Dr. Perricone's 7 secrets to beauty, health, and longevity? Do you have 15 minutes a day to look and feel better? Then let me introduce you to DTaP, the workout that works. For the beginner or expert exerciser, learn from physical training specialist Teresa Tapp how, in just 15 minutes a day, you can burn fat and sugar, build strong bones and muscles, and lose inches fast with no equipment or jumping. Visit the TTAP website, ttap.com, or call 1-800-342-0717 to learn how. That's T-TAPP TeaTap.com. We'll help you lose inches, look good, and feel fabulous at TeaTap. 1-800-342-0717. TeaTap.com.
Hi, this is Donna. I want to share a cute story with you. My guest, who I just had on, she said that when she sent out her cookbook to a publishing house, the person that received the manuscript opened it up and decided they were going to fix the mayonnaise substitute that she has in her book, Cooking with Love. The woman liked it so much, she sent her a contract immediately. So, if you're going to write a cookbook, just know that your stuff's going to be tested. But let me give you the mayonnaise substitute real quickly, because I think it's fun. It's an 8-ounce container of plain yogurt, a quarter of a teaspoon of powdered mustard, and a teaspoon of minced dill. You put it all in a bowl, mix it up, and that can be your mayonnaise substitute. So, it got this lady's book on the publishing agenda, so I just wanted to share that with you quickly, because so many of us are always looking for ways that we can enjoy good taste and maybe give up some of the things that we have not, you know, it's just for one reason or another, if, you know, we feel like if we spend 3 seconds on the hips, it's going to look, you know, 4 inches expanded, or 3 seconds on the lips and 4 inches expanded in the hips is what I wanted to say. So anyway, that's just a little bit of extra tidbit that I wanted to give you. I do enjoy talking about cooking. I don't have as much time to do it as I would like, but I just have such an appreciation for people that are so interested in sharing their culture and their delicious recipes. Well, phone lines are now open for you to call in. If you would like for me to light up your life with a little bit of intuitive insight, here is the toll-free worldwide number to call in to 888-815-9756. That's 888-815-9756. Also, I wanted to let you know that tomorrow we're going to be talking about love your body, love your life. And this is, I think, something that is significant to talk about during the holidays. Here we are talking about food. I was having a conversation with someone just yesterday about how important it is to keep ourselves fit and keep ourselves well. And as we get older, it just seems like everything gets rounded out. And you just go, oh my goodness, why is it so hard? Well, our bodies use food differently. But so often in this country, we have an attitude about our bodies that's not really positive. And we need to know and respect this wonderful, wonderful living machine that we are in. And maybe that's an odd description, but the human body is really amazing. And lots of times, because we don't look like something on the cover of a magazine, this goes for the guys as well as the gals, but we gals really seem to get off on the deep end. This book, I think, Love Your Body, Love Your Life, is really something very good to have in your library. Now, next week is Christmas week. We're going to be talking on Monday about the Complete Guide to Holistic Cat Care. Celeste Books, we're going to be speaking with her. It is absolutely wonderful. I had a copy. I gave a copy to a friend of mine who's an avid cat lover, and her husband was reading it to her. Wherever they drive, the cat book is in the car, and he's sharing it with us, so it's just great. Also, if insomnia is something that you experience, we're going to find out how to have restful sleep. Sandra Kornblatt is my guest, and we're going to be learning how we don't have to have insomnia. And then Barbara Semple is going to be my guest. We're going to be talking about healing, instant healing. And then, of course, the day before Christmas, I've got wonderful stories to share with you. You're sending me all kinds of wonderful ideas, and I want to say thank you so much. If you have special stories, I'd love to have them for the holidays. If you have a special recipe you'd like to share with me, or if there's a special family tradition, I always enjoy knowing these things. This is a fabulous, fabulous season, and so we will be talking about that, and then on Christmas Day, we'll be running my holiday traditional show that I have where I tell stories and share some very special things with you. So that is going to be the lineup for next week. Oh, it's just great to talk with all of these people and get their concepts and the ideas. You know, before we know it, we're going to be into a new year. Why not start off with a wonderful attitude, a wonderful understanding about what the possibilities of life really can be and where you can go with your life and the tools that you can implement to make your life better. So that's what we like to do on the show here. Now, I wanted to share with you some information about horses. This is about how, back in the 1800s, it was discovered that horses could do math. Now, it started with a gentleman, a German, Wilhelm von Osten. Now, he decided that animals were exceedingly intelligent, which they are, and because he had such a belief in this in the 1800s, he began working with a cat, a bear, and a Russian stallion that he named Hans. Now, eventually, with a lot of work, Hans was able to understand simple math and to solve problems. He could read, tell what date it was, and distinguish between harmonious and music that wasn't pleasing to the ear. When the word got out about what this animal could do, he became very, very famous. Scientists and scholars throughout Europe came to study him, and this created a controversy of controversy. Can you imagine that in that time? Well, even today, there are people that think animals are dumb, and they're not. Well, this really caused an absolute fever of curiosity. Now, when Van Osten died in 1909, Hans went to a friend of his, Herr Kroll, who absolutely loved the horse. And do you know what? He brought in two Arabian stallions, Arif and Muhammad, to his teaching class, and they quickly surpassed Hans in their lessons. Now, what they found with the Arabian stallion, Muhammad, that addition and subtraction, and within 4 months, he could multiply, divide, and extract square and cube roots. Kroll also devised an alphabet board, which he combined with a form of Morse code to teach the animals to spell. Tapping with one hoof represented the dots, and tapping with another represented the dashes. Well, it brought in a lot of people. To keep his accomplishments with these three horses from being tainted by monetary gain, he refused to charge admission to see them. Professors came from across Europe. They examined the animals, and at one point, when Zarif stopped in the middle of a session, one of the scientists asked him why he had, the stallion tapped out, tired. Then he added, pain in leg. The examiners asked the horses why they did not speak instead of tapping out answers. And one horse made repeated efforts to talk, but ended up going to his alphabet board and tapping out, I have not a good voice. Fascinating stuff. This was done in the 1800s. Look at what we've found out today about gorillas. Of course, we've known it about birds, and animals do communicate. We've got recordings of whales in their communication capacity, but just because they can't speak as we do does not mean they're dumb. Far from it. I just wanted to share that little story with you. Well, also, I wanted to share with you some Christmas traditions, and I have a lovely, lovely story that I think about angels that you will enjoy. But more than anything else, if you'd like to call in and chat with me, here is the telephone number to call in to. 888-815-9756. That's 888-815-9756. Also, I wanted to share with you today how fake DNA, that's right, fake DNA fooled a crime lab. This is something that is really interesting stuff. And, you know, for everything that we discover, there's always going to be some person out there that's going to say, how can I use this in a way that allows me to get away with something or create something that is not really real? Well, DNA, as you know, as evidence, has become a standard forensic tool because it can pinpoint an individual out of millions. But I'm going to share with you the story of how someone fooled a crime lab. This is Donna Sebo. We're going to be taking a break in just a moment. Don't forget, if you wanted to call in and chat with me, 888-815-9756 is the number to reach me on. We'll be back in just a moment.
If you're searching for the perfect gift for a child, consider God's Kiss by Donna Sebo. That's right. Donna is not only a mental practitioner and psychic, she's an author as well. God's Kiss beckons all children and the young at heart to enter the dream world of a little traveler named Johnny. You can order your book today by sending a check or money order to Mrs. Sebo's Classics, Post Office Box 97272, Tacoma, Washington, 98497. That's Post Office Box 97272, Tacoma, Washington, 98497. If you'd like both the book and cassette, you pay $19.95 plus applicable tax and shipping charges. This is the book for your favorite child of any age. Donna Sebo's God's Kiss is about a child's sense of place in the world, and it's destined to be a children's classic. Order now. Call 800-872-8852. God's Kiss is written by Donna Sebo and illustrated by Ed Ged Rose. Buy it today. 800-872-8852.
Do you have a group, organization, or club that would like to have an interesting and dynamic speaker? Then you're going to want to have Donna speak to your group. She motivates audiences towards personal empowerment, giving them tools for their personal and professional success. If you would like Donna Sebo to bring a presentation to your next event, call Delphi International at 253-582-5604. That's 253-582-5604.
Hi, this is Donna. Give me a buzz if you'd like to chat. 888-815-9756. I started off telling you about DNA. There's an Israeli company, Nuclex, that has shown that it's so easy to make a phony DNA fingerprint. Now, would you and I be interested in making a fake fingerprint? I don't think so, but there are people out there that would. Now, what they did in their experiment, they took a small bit of DNA, which can be collected from an object like a cigarette butt. I mean, it can be collected from just about everything, from a particular test subject. They replicated it millions of times over and used it to build an artificial DNA sequence. They then added the built-up DNA to blood that had been processed to remove the original, the DNA containing white blood cells. Now, when they were analyzed by a leading forensic lab, the mixture was indistinguishable from real blood and natural genetic material. Not only that, these same researchers fabricated artificial DNA using only sequence data and added it to a saliva sample. This fake saliva sample passed inspection. Now, this experiment was done entirely with commercial technology. There's a DNA expert, Larry Kobolinsky of John Jay College of Criminal Justice in New York, doubts that most criminals would have the skills to pull it off. However, because this was done in a lab, they know it can be done, so they've now developed a test that can screen for fake DNA. My goodness, nothing ever stays simple, does it? It's always something new that's being developed. Donna Sebo here. Give me a buzz if you'd like to chat. 888-815-9756. Well, I have this delightful Christmas story, and it was shared with me by Joan Anderson. And it's about the 1970s. There was a congregation in Rockford, Illinois, who bought some farmland in order to build themselves a church, and they decided they also wanted a radio station. And they erected a little house that would shelter the station temporarily if it ever got launched. Now, starting the station required just the right person. Pastor Don Lyons knew someone sharing the community's spiritual views, but with a professional background in the media. And he would focus and meditate on it from time to time, and the pastor would find that a name would be spelled out in his mind. It was Ketzort, This is what was spelled out in his mind. Now, it was a very unusual name. He had never heard of a name like this. And he thought, oh, well, maybe it's just my imagination coming up with this. However, there was a day when various churches in the community of Rockford hosted a pastor's meeting, and they had clergy that came in from all over the state, and Pastor Lyons was greeting guests when a young man stepped up to introduce himself. When he saw the young man's name tag, his mouth fell open. The young man's name was Ron Tetzort. Not only was Ron a pastor, but he also had had a radio and television ministry in Sioux City, Iowa. Now, soon, Ron accepted the job of becoming station manager and moved his wife, Millie, and their family to Rockford, Illinois. The station was WQFL. It began to broadcast, but keeping it on the air was really difficult, and Ron found it hard to meet the monthly bills. Because the station was a spiritual venture, he ran very few paid commercials, at least at first. He said, we felt that if this was the right thing for us to do, our needs would be supplied through donations. Well, Ron would work with management duties and hired a small staff. Millie acted as a part-time receptionist, bookkeeper, and occasional programmer. Millie said, we just did all kinds of things at this station. But it was fun, and it also was a labor of love. We really enjoyed what we were doing. However, as the winter of 1975 approached, Ron and Millie were having to face a bitter reality. Despite all of their dedication, their long hours, all her prayers, the station was in serious financial trouble. Their listener base was definitely increasing. Fundraisers were frequent and profitable. The audience wanted to have the shows go on, but their expenses were going up, and the revenues were not meeting those expenses. They had fallen behind a little each month, and one afternoon, when Millie did the book, she came to a grim conclusion. In order to catch up and keep going, the station, WQFL, needed just over $3,000. Now is when they needed it. Millie said, well, you know, it should have been $3 million. It would have been just as easy to get. She was just really very distressed. She was ready to cry. She said Christmas was approaching, but for her and Ron, it seemed like it was the end of their dream rather than a hopeful beginning. All their hard work, all the dreams that had been shared by their congregation, everything seemed to be sinking in a mass of debt. Well, it just seemed to get worse. It started to snow. Nobody was coming by. She was just getting more and more distressed. She wished she had somebody to keep her company, just to give her a feeling of the Christmas spirit, because she sure wasn't having it in the moment. Now, there was a very interesting occurrence that happened. Here she is feeling so depressed, so down, when the front door to the station opens. There's a middle-aged man who walks in, carrying a sealed envelope. Millie didn't know him. She didn't hear a car coming up their driveway to the station. She didn't hear the footsteps on the porch, as she usually did. However, she said it was snowing. Maybe that just sort of muffled the walking sounds. And she knew to all the townspeople, but she had never seen this man before. The man handed her an envelope, said, give this to Ron. Use it for the station. She asked him, she said, thank you first, obviously. Would you like to talk to Ron? I can call him. He said, no, that won't be necessary. Now, at the station, it wasn't unusual for people just to pop in with a donation. And as far as they were concerned, they felt that the station belonged to everybody in town, so this behavior was not necessarily unusual. But usually a benefactor would stay to chat. This man didn't want a receipt, didn't want anything. He just left. She goes back to her boss's desk, lays the envelope in front of him. And he wasn't even thinking. He was focusing, sort of like Millie was, on how bad everything was. He opens up the envelope and all of a sudden looks into it, takes the cash out inside. There was over $3,000 in bills in that envelope. Who would give him this much money, would not want a receipt? They were concerned. This must have been a mistake. But you know what? When they opened the front door to call the man back to find out who it was, there was no car parked in the front of the little building, no tire tracks in the driveway, none coming down from the road, and none going back. When he looked at his snow-covered porch, the steps leading away from it, the front walk, he hadn't shoveled it yet, but there were no footprints that were in the snow at all. Perfect smoothness went across the entire landscape. That donation was a turning point. They were able to launch a sister station, WGSL, in 1988. Both stations are running beautifully. Miracles do happen, and sometimes in ways you'd never imagine. This is Donna Sebo. We'll be talking with you tomorrow, same time, same place. Have a fabulous evening. Have a wonderful holiday season. Talk with you tomorrow. Bye for now.
You have been listening to The Donna Sebo Show. If you would like a copy of today's broadcast, send $10 to The Donna Sebo Show, P.O. Box 97272, Tacoma, Washington, 98497-0272. Be sure to put the date of the broadcast in your request. If you are not able to be a part of today's program, join Donna and her guests Monday through Friday, and she will be here to take your calls. Thank you for listening and being part of our program. Have a wonderful day.